You might be opening your Bibles to John chapter 13. John chapter 13, that's where we'll begin shortly. Before we do that, I want you to think back to Acts chapter 2, to the day of Pentecost, to Peter and the first sermon, and the powerful scene that must have been in Acts chapter 2 when 3,000 people obeyed the gospel. 3,000 people. And what an amazing display of God's power and of the Holy Spirit. And what an amazing time to have been able to be there and witness that. But what if Peter didn't have the nerve to stand up that day in front of all those Jews who had shortly before crucified Jesus? What if he didn't have the nerve to stand up there and bring that message? What if John didn't have the heart to become a disciple, a follower of Jesus himself, and to carry that on, to encourage other people and inspire and motivate other people to do the same? What if all the apostles had a heart like Judas? What if every individual that followed Jesus at any point throughout the New Testament, what if every single one of those individuals had listened to his message and said, "I'll pass. I'm not really interested." Where would we be today? Where would we be without all those men who saw Jesus and heard his words and decided to follow him? Where would we be without all those men who wrote the books of the New Testament? Where would we be? I think those men did what they did because Jesus was such a great leader. Everything about Jesus, everything he did and everything that he said, all of his actions were about leading people. And when we read through the first couple of chapters of the book of Acts, we see they're thrown in prison. They get out, thrown in prison again. We know about the times they were beaten. We know about how they were persecuted. We know about all the things that they endured and how they not only endured them themselves, but looked at other people and said, "You've got to endure these persecutions." Almost all of them, even to the point of death. And I think it was because they followed this man, Jesus, who was such a great leader. So when we look at their lives and we see all the things that they accomplished, and we see how great a leader Jesus was, we can't help but maybe look a little bit closer and take some lessons. What did Jesus do? What were the things that he said? What was it about the way that he operated that caused them to be willing to do all the things that they did for his message? And that's what we're going to look at tonight. The leadership of Jesus. What it meant to the apostles. What it meant to his disciples. What does it mean to us? How can we learn lessons from the way Jesus led so that we can lead our families and our churches and our communities and our places of work? What made Jesus the great leader that he was? But first of all, I want to give you one statistic. If you don't believe in the value of leadership, I want to give you one statistic that I don't know how convincing it will be to you. It was pretty convincing to me. But in the United States, if you take all the inmates in the United States, all over the country, 85% of the inmates in the United States come from fatherless homes. It's pretty telling, isn't it? 85% of all the inmates in the United States come from fatherless homes. There's nothing more important. There's nothing more important. And if you're in that role in any capacity, if you're the boss at your place of work, if you're the teacher in your classroom, if you're the father in your family, if you're the mother in your family, it doesn't matter what it is. If you're in a leadership role in any capacity, in fact, I think what you're going to see tonight is no matter who you are a leader in some capacity. It may not be your title. There may not be anyone that looks at you and says, he's my boss, she's my boss, whatever. But you're a leader, or you can be a leader through your actions. And there's no more important role for every one of us to fill. Well, we're going to begin in John chapter 13, and we're going to look at the leadership of Jesus. And hopefully, you'll discover some things that you can apply to your life, that you can apply in your home, that you can apply in your place of work, that can help spark a change, that can help lead people in a new direction. But I want you to think about this before we begin. Leaders don't demand followers. Leaders just do what they do. And as a result, it produces other leaders. And I really want you to think about that as we go through all these points that we're going to talk about tonight. A leader is not someone who says, you will follow me. A leader is someone who just does what they do, and they do it so well that people want to follow, and people want to be like them, and people want to lead the same way. And that's one of the greatest quotes I think I've ever heard it from John Wooden. I know some of y'all probably know about Coach Wooden. My wife, she's been on my case. She says I talk about sports way too much, but I tell her, you know, you just talk about what you know. I don't know what else to say. So I'm working on it. I'm working on it, I promise. But one of the things he said is real leaders are people who produce leaders. And real leaders not only produce leaders, but they produce leaders who produce leaders. So it's almost like it becomes a generational type of thing. But I think that's what we're going to see in Jesus as he handed it down to the apostles, and hopefully they hand it down to us. And we look to hand it down to generation after generation. But beginning in John chapter 13 and verse 1, very important. John chapter 13 and verse 1 says, now before the feast of the Passover, Jesus, knowing that his hour had come, that he would depart out of this world to the Father, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. Now here's what I want you to notice is so important about that verse. And if you've been reading with us through the book of John over the last 2 weeks, you've noticed on a couple occasions at least that there's been times when it said, and Jesus escaped because it was not yet his time. It was not yet his time. It was not yet his time. Y'all read that? You've heard that. It was not yet his time. His hour had not yet come. And here we come to chapter 13 and verse 1, and it says his time had come. He knew that his time had come. It is the time. It is now. This is what he's been preparing for. This is what it's all been about. This is the moment. And now remember, Jesus knows. Okay? He is fully aware of what's about to happen. And it is his time. So knowing what he knows, I think it's very interesting to watch the next few chapters of the book of John unfold, beginning in John chapter 13 and in verse 5. Then he poured water into the basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel with which he was girded. So he came to Simon Peter. He said to him, Lord, do you wash my feet? Jesus answered and said to him, what I do you do not realize now, but you will understand hereafter. And Peter said to him, never shall you wash my feet. Jesus answered him, if I do not wash you, you have no part with me. And Simon Peter said to him, Lord, then wash not only my feet, but also my hands and my head. Isn't it interesting? In verse 1, in chapter 13, verse 1, it says, Jesus knew his time had come. Now, we have the benefit of knowing what that means because we get the story beforehand, right? So we know what that means. We know what Jesus understands. He knows that he's within a matter of hours before an arrest, an unfair trial, ultimately a crucifixion. And what's he doing? He's washing feet. He's washing feet. That's what made Jesus a great leader. He was a servant of other people, first and foremost. The most pressing time in his life, the most stressed out he could ever possibly be. Any of us couldn't even begin to understand what all's going through his mind. And here he is washing their feet. And not only that, look at verse 14. Or beginning of verse 13. I'm sorry. It says, "You call me teacher and Lord, and you are right, for so I am. If I then, the Lord and the teacher, washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet." He says, not only am I here serving you, but I want you to follow my example. Every one of you follow my example. That's what this thing is about. Serving other people. Prioritizing other people. Jesus understood that this life was bigger than him. He had to make a point to these men. He was trying to deliver a message. He was trying to bring them to a place where they would understand and follow. And not only follow, but they would lead other people to him. Here's the thing. We got plenty of people out there. They're not hard to find that are full of themselves. We got plenty of people out there. They're not hard to find that like to tell somebody else what to do. And we got plenty of people that think that what they think is more important than what you think, or what they know is better than what you know, or their way is better than your way, or whatever it is. The world is full of them. And here is the one, the true one, whose way is better than everyone's way. The one who does know better than we know. The one who is wiser than all of us. And he's saying, at his time, come here and let me wash your feet. He was a servant. First and foremost, he was a servant. There's two things I want you to notice as we think back. If you had the opportunity to know Shane and Shelby's mother and father, which I know some of you have, and some of you haven't been that fortunate. About 2 weeks ago, Shane called me and asked me to go out to sit with his father one night. So I drive over to his house and we ride over to his mother and father's home. And we get there, and now Shane's mom has been sitting with his father in their living room, in a hospital bed, literally all day, taking care of everything he needed. The majority of the day alone, I'm sure. So we get there, and our primary role is really just to give her a break and let her have some stress relief time. So we get there and we come in. Is there anything we can do? Is there anything we can help you with? No, I'm fine. If y'all just have a seat and answer the phone, and I'm going to go outside and cut the grass. And I thought, you got to be kidding me. I said, well, we'll cut the grass for you. And she said, no, I'll enjoy getting out of the house. I just want a little break. And I said, man, I looked at Shane. I thought, man, she's working. She's been working all day, and then we come to give her a break, and she's going to go work somewhere else. I mean, she's a dinosaur, man. I mean, those kind of people are extinct. I mean, those kind of people aren't here anymore. They aren't walking on the earth anymore. I mean, people that work like that, I thought, man, that is amazing to me. So we go throughout the course of the night. I don't even recall exactly what time we left. It was probably about 10 o'clock that night. And we came back home. About 3 days later, I get a card in the mail from Shane's mother. I get a card that says, thank you for coming out to help out, from Shane's mother. The woman who is going through probably the worst time in her life right now, the worst experience of her life right now. She's just lost her husband. This was about 2 weeks ago, and knowing it was inevitable. She's got two grandchildren on the way, their first two grandchildren on the way, that, you know, the thought had to cross her mind that her husband would possibly not get to see those two grandchildren. And she's thinking about writing me a card. And I opened that card up and read it in the standing there in the street by the mailbox, and I thought, what a servant. It's unbelievable. Somebody who works like she works, and somebody who, through all that she's got going on, and she's thinking about me. And that she needed to make a point to tell me thank you. It's unbelievable. It's the first time I'd ever met her. And last night I was able to go with Wayne out there again. Walked in the door, and I don't know why it surprises me, after the experience I had with her the first time, she remembered my name. And I thought, man, that's unbelievable. What a servant. How proud God must be. How honored He must be to have His Father with Him now. Leaders are people who serve. Leaders are people who are going to be there for you. Leaders are people who say, this life is a whole lot bigger than me. Now, I always think about this when I played ball with this guy. He was a dear, dear friend of mine for a long time, all the way through high school. And whenever you were going through something, he would always just look at you and say, hey, man, I got you. I got you. And that's what I always think about. And he was there for me through a lot of tough times. So I always see that vision and hear those words. Whenever I think about somebody going through something hard, I can see him saying, hey, I got you. That's what servants do. That's what servants do. A servant is going to be there at Hazel Grubb's house saying, I got you. A servant is going to be there at Shane Basham and Shelby Basham's house saying, I got you. That's what Jesus did for His disciples. That's what we got to do. Skip down to verse 34. Notice what Jesus says in John 13, verse 34. He says, a new commandment I give to you, that you love one another, even as I have loved you, that you also love one another. By this, all men will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another. The second thing Jesus did, He had an immense, immeasurable love for other people. We can't even put it into words. I guess the best way you could put it into words would be to describe how He said the two greatest commands were that you will love your God with all of your being, and that you'll love your neighbor as yourself. And what a high standard that is. But that's exactly what Jesus did for us. I love the example in John chapter 3. We have Jesus standing there having a conversation with Nicodemus, this man of great social status. Look what all he's accomplished. He's well respected. He's dignified. He's educated. He's everything that every person in the Jewish society wanted to be. And Jesus stands there with him and says, I've got what you need. You're missing what you need, and I've got it. I've got the answer. And I want to share that answer with you because I love you so much. Because God loved the world so much. And then you flip over to John chapter 4, and you see Jesus standing at the well with this Samaritan woman. She's a disrespected race. She's a disrespected gender. She's at the well at noon because that's when nobody goes, because she's so ashamed of who she was. But she was important to Jesus. And the same message Jesus gave to Nicodemus just one chapter earlier, he's given to that woman at the well, that woman who's at the bottom rung of society. And Jesus is saying, I got what you need. And I'm going to share it with you because I love you. He had an intense, immeasurable love for other people. And that right there tells me he saw value in every individual. And if we all could only mimic that, he saw value in everyone. It didn't matter who you were. It didn't matter where you were from. It didn't matter what you had done, what you had accomplished. None of that mattered. Jesus saw value in your soul. And he was going to make it a point to let you know. And he passed that on to his apostles. He said, you've got to model this love. I modeled it for you. You've got to model it for the world. That's what you got to be about. That's what it takes to be a leader. You've heard it said, no one cares how much you know until they know how much you care, right? That's what it takes to be a leader. You got to love everyone. One of my favorite sayings is, if you don't love them, don't try to lead them. I think that's a beautiful saying, but that's what Jesus did. He had an amazing love for everyone. Skip to chapter 14, beginning in verse 1. This is Jesus talking to his disciples. He says, do not let your heart be troubled. Believe in God. Believe also in me. In my Father's house are many dwelling places. If it were not so, I would have told you. For I go to prepare a place for you. If I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you to myself, that where I am, there you may be also. And you know the way where I am going. But Thomas said to him, Lord, we do not know where you are going. How do we know the way? Jesus said to him, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father but through me. This is what I want you to notice. Great leaders have amazing focus. They're focused on where they're going, and they're focused on how they're going to get there. And that was Jesus right here. He says, I'm going to prepare a place. My heart is somewhere else. I love y'all, but my heart is somewhere else. And I'm going to get this place ready. And I can't wait to get there. And I can't wait for all of y'all to get there too. But I'm going to get a place ready. I'm going to prepare a place for you. If I don't go, you can't come. So let me go and get it ready. And Thomas says, hold on now. We don't know how to get there. And Jesus says, all you got to do is follow me. I'm the way. I'm the truth. I'm the life. I'm everything you need to know. Just follow me. I love that. But that's what leaders do. Leaders are focused, man. They're focused on where they're going, but not just where they're going, but they're focused on how they're going to get there. And that's what we got to be. That's what we got to do. That's what your family needs. Your family needs you to be focused on how we're going to get there. The step by step, the day by day, every single decision that you make, you got to be focused. When ball season starts, every team is dreaming about the trophy. But there's going to be one team at the end that was focused enough in everything they did, every single day, every single process, that's going to be the fortunate team at the end. And you can apply that to anything. I walk in a math classroom at the beginning of the year. Every kid in there wants to make the grade. No one walks in there the first day and says, man, I can't wait to fail this class. But you got to focus on the process. What do I have to do today? And I'm going to get today behind me, and then I'm going to wake up tomorrow. And what do I got to do today? And then I'm going to wake up the next day. And what do I got to do today? And I focus on that process. And when I carry out that process over and over and over, in the end, I'll make it happen. You don't just wake up one morning and say, I think I'm going to lose 40 pounds today. It's a process. Step by step, day by day, focus on the goal, and you'll get there. Jesus had this incredible focus. He knew where he was going. He had his eyes on that mansion. He had his mind set on that mansion. I'm going to prepare this place for you. I told Mark Smith in a conversation the other day, we were talking about the eternal crowns. I think it was the last sermon I preached, and we were talking about that. I said, I just want one of those mansions. I don't care about a crown. I just want one of those mansions so everybody can come to my place. I want everybody to come with me. And me and Mark were laughing and smiling about it. But that's what Jesus' message is right here. I want to prepare a place for you. I want you to be there with me. I want us to be there together. This is what we got to do. Focus on the way. Get it done. One more thing I want you to notice. In verse 15 of chapter 14, Jesus says, if you love me, you will keep my commandments. Great leaders just obey. They just obey. That's what Jesus did. From the time he set foot on this earth, he just obeyed. Not my will, but yours. It doesn't matter what I got to do. I'm going to do it. I'm just going to obey. And that's what we got to do. Obey, obey, obey. Every single day, follow the commands. Every single day, do what he says. We just got to obey. And it really is that simple. It really is that simple. But I'll tell you what else is that simple. When you disobey, and one of the things we've been noting in the college class studying the life of David, when you disobey, you better expect it. There's going to be consequences. It's going to affect some people around you. If you disobey, it's going to affect your children. If you disobey, it's going to affect your relationship with your spouse. If you disobey, it's going to affect the church. That's just the way it is. You can't disobey and not expect to not only lose respect yourself, but God loses some of that respect too. When God's children disobey, God loses some of that respect too. We've got to be obedient. That's what the people saw from Jesus. You don't have to be loud about it, obnoxious about it. You don't have to be a Pharisee. In fact, people admire more the people who just quietly do their job. They just do the right thing. And if you're one of those people, if your children can say that about you, man, I am just so confident that my mother will do the right thing. I am so confident that my father will do the right thing. That's what impacts their life. When you make them go to church, but then you leave here and you go home, you don't keep the commands, you live a different lifestyle, that doesn't impact their life. Actually, it does, just in a negative way. Just doing the right thing. When they grow up, that's going to make them say, you know what? This is what my father would have done. This is what my mother would have done. They would have done the right thing. I know that. I know that for a fact. Obey, obey, obey. Look at verse 31 of chapter 14. Jesus said, but so that the world may know that I love the Father, I do exactly as the Father commanded me. That's how they know. You see that? That's beautiful. How do they know? How does the world know that he's from the Father? Jesus said, I do exactly what he says. How are they going to know that we're the Father's children? Because we do exactly what he says. We just obey. Bottom line, just obey. Those are the four things that I believe Jesus used to lead his apostles and his disciples. But now Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, imitate me as I imitate Christ. That's a statement from a leader. I love that verse. Imitate me as I imitate Christ. It's almost like Paul saying, this is what we're going to do. You're going to get on my back, and I'm going to get on Jesus' back, and we're going. We're going to get it done. Because there's a place that's waiting for us. So just follow my lead, because you can rest assured that I'm following his lead. If you follow me, you know I'm following him, and we're going. We're going to get it done. I love that. I love that. You watch a basketball game. Here I go again. You watch a basketball game, and you see, you know, that moment in the game where it's tense, and what's going to happen? Who's going to step up and make the play? And you see some guy, he steals the ball, he breaks away, and he dunks, and he looks in the camera, and he says, let's go. Or he looks at his teammates and says, let's go. I love that. That's Paul right here. He's saying, let's go. We're going to do this. We're going to get it done. Get on my back, because you know where I'm going. Follow me, because I'm following Christ. I love that. That's what leaders do. Leaders produce leaders. They say, let's go. Right now is a dark time. We're desperate. We're desperate in our homes for leaders. Our children are walking away a lot of times because we fail to be leaders. We're desperate in our churches for leaders. We're desperate in our country for leaders. It's a dark, dark time. And when you're in the middle of darkness, a leader is someone who's going to walk in the room and find the light switch. We need more people finding the light switch. We got too many people walking around in circles in the dark. Jesus left this message with his apostles. This is how you get it done. You serve other people. You love other people. You focus on what you're doing and you focus on how to get there. And you just obey. If you don't know how to lead your family, there it is, right there. If you don't know how to be a leader in your place of work, there it is. If you don't know how to be a leader in your church, there it is. You don't have to be the guy standing up here with the microphone. You don't have to be the woman that's teaching the ladies Bible class. You don't have to be the kid that's doing whatever. Just keep doing those four things. And you're going to be a leader. Somebody's going to look at you and say, I like what he's got. I like what she's got. They're going in the right direction. And they want me to go with them. Because that's what leaders do. This lesson hasn't been a lesson designed to bring you to Christ if you've never obeyed the gospel. I want to extend that opportunity to you now if that is your case. If you are living in a life of sin and you need to make it right, you'll have the opportunity in just a second to come forward while we stand and sing. But if you have made that decision in the past, and for some reason you haven't been the leader that you should be, it's having an impact on somebody else. It's got an impact on your eternal destiny, but it's also got an impact on somebody else. And you need to make that right. If you're not going to lead today, if each one of us is not going to be a leader, who is? Who is? If you're subject to the invitation, please come forward while we stand and sing.